This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me after thawing out from the winter break, Mr. Chris Bird and Mr. Phil Shaw.
Hello. Welcome back. How are you?
All right. How was your winter break?
Restful, calming, reasonably productive for once.
Oh, you went on another meditation retreat,
did my hot yoga.
That's what Chris
hot
Bird
yoga
likes
and meditation.
To do. Busted on this show. You, Mr. Phil, Mr. Shaw, what do you get up to?
Nothing. Not a lot, really. Just stared out the window, just waiting for Villa to come back.
Waiting to record another podcast. Do you need to get a life?
You're in Monaco, sure, man.
You need to get a life.
Buy a boat.
If you've watched the news, Monaco's not looking prosperous at the moment.
What kind of father are you if you spend your days just staring out the window? You should be bringing up your son to be a better version of you.
he's done goalkeeping training, so he just stands there while I kick the ball at him, so that's enough.
There you go.
Put him to work. I just got back. I went to the dam to visit family for a few days, just on the low key. And I've returned back to the city that... Only 68% of people have had their first vaccination. I wonder what city that could be. I think most cities in this country are around 80, 90%, aren't they? Right, coming up in the show, we are back. There has been no games. There's been a couple of friendlies, winter break friendlies. We will not be pretending to do match reports like a certain local newspaper did by just copying what the club put on their website. But we will concentrate the main bit of the show looking at the January business in and out and how that makes us feel going forward to what should be an interesting and exciting second part of the season. We'll have all the regulars, the Villa News, Media Muppets, the 3 points... before addressing the burning question of the week. We'll actually do there's a few burning questions actually, so we'll do the rest of them in My Old Man Said Patreon extra show. Right, I've missed the last week's news being away, and I've purposely haven't kept
probably for the best
going on.
Yep.
In the UK. So what's the options on the news front?
You've got just, you know, the government just chewing themselves up and eating themselves alive. Or England are now crap at cricket and rugby, it would appear, after the start of the Six Nations weekend.
Oh, yes.
What a disaster that was in Murrayfield. Fucking rubbish. And you've got all the Phil stuff going on over there.
Inflation.
Let's have some Villa news. I'm not interested in... Especially I'm not interested in Northern Ireland. Good God.
Nobody is.
I think it's time to build a new United Kingdom.
Which annexed.
with, you know, 5 new countries, I think, or 4 new countries, whatever it is. All right, so let's get into this Villa news. It still makes me laugh, people hovering around Twitter or whatever on deadline day, refreshing it. You should have a good idea now that Villa know what they're doing in the transfer market. So they do their ins when it comes to their transfer business before deadline day. Deadline day is for the desperados.
Newcastle, isn't it?
Yeah, if you want to sum it up in with one club. You know, it's also, if you haven't got your strategy down, it's, I mean, it's kind of, you might be able to, if there's a player really trying to get out, you might be able to seize the day. But you had a good feeling that Villa were done and dusted, and it was really about, you know, who they could get out on loan. And in the final hours of the transfer window, it was Jed Steer going to Luton and Matt Target going to Newcastle. I mean, we'll talk about all these later on in the show. Since the last show, we've also signed Callum Chambers from Arsenal. Some sources say 2 million.
It's a free deal. Arsenal are saving up to 2 million is the deal, apparently, from all the reliable sources. Right, so with his wages and potential bonuses, they saved 2 million.
Right. And Robin Olsen also came in as a number two to Martinez, the Swedish goalkeeper. Meanwhile, in this winter break, as we said on the last podcast, Steven Gerrard described it as gold dust in terms of having time to have a kind of a mini pre-season to get his ethos and plans into place. Apart from the South American guys and the AFCON guys, he's had most of his squad available, and they've played a couple of friendlies. We finally beat Brentford, god damn it,
when no one was there to see it. Is that like if a tree falls in the forest type scenario?
Yeah, exactly. What did it happen? And we also beat that team that Norwegians, they see it as some kind of antichrist. Molde, we beat them 3-1. This first game, was it Mings and Watkins?
Watkins scored in both.
And then this time it was McGinn, Ramsey.
Some belting goals in the Molde game. Obviously, the club put some videos up, man. The Ramsey finish is brilliant, and the McGinn finish is a great goal as well. In fact, they're all good goals.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Trezeguet and Traore are actually they're getting a bit of fitness. Actually, they've managed to go deep into the African Nations Cup. Trezeguet is in the final, which will be played after this podcast. Meanwhile, Mr. Shaw was telling us how Burkina Faso were 3-0 up with a few minutes to go against Cameroon, and I was just checking something, and it was 3-3, like instantly.
Yeah.
After he said that, I think 5 seconds later, I just checked something on Twitter and saw that the score was 3-3, which kind of sums up Bertrand
Traoré. And
then
they lost on penalties.
Like,
yeah.
Did they?
All right. So they came fourth.
Did Traoré miss?
Highly likely. Sorry.
Well, at least he's trusted to take one. Trezeguet's been in, what, 3 shootouts or something, and he hasn't been trusted to take a penalty.
Yeah, but they've won them
yet.
All.
Yes. See, the Egyptian manager's no fool.
He scored in the, was it the quarterfinal? He scored the winner. He just pops up with a big goal and says, "You just do your job, Mr. Trezeguet. You just pop up and score a goal every now and then. That'll do."
Meanwhile, in South America, Martinez and Buendia basically took care of business, and Coutinho scored a bit of a stunner against Paraguay. It's good to see one of his tricks in his locker was always his outside-the-box shooting for Liverpool. So it was good to see him getting warmed up for
Leeds.
Numerous long strikes for the Villa. Meanwhile, back home, Buendia was voted Player of the Month, and Alicia Lerman was voted Player of the Month for the Villa women's team as well. Right then, I think it's time for Media Muppets. Right, Mr. Shaw, what is in the Media Muppet trough this week?
Well, I could say, like, here we go, and plenty of people would know who it was, because it's everyone.
But would they?
Well,
is he that famous
now? He is. He's got that famous. I mean,
it's easy, isn't it, to become famous in this world? You just need a catchphrase and a Twitch channel, and away you go.
Well, I mean, he's everyone's favourite transfer aggregator, Fabrizio Romano, and this was him writing in The Guardian. Now, as what he does as a reporter of deals, I mean, other than, like, he could be a bot, apart from that, you know, he's fine. He just reports what's happened. My favourite one over the whole transfer window was what he tweeted after the Callum Chambers deal. Official: Aston Villa announced the signing of Callum Chambers from Arsenal. Club statement confirms. I mean, what a scoop. I mean, I think he's a bit half an hour after everyone else knew about it. But what his real thing that I took offence to this week was the bit he wrote for The Guardian. Now, the headline was, The January window displayed which Premier League clubs have a plan. And he goes, this was a typical January window with slow weeks followed by a crazy final few days. Some clubs moved late and had moments of panic. Others had an obvious plan. So I'm looking at this going, right, he's the man behind the deals. He's the inside info. He's going to tell me, you know, how panicky these clubs were. But no. Instead of that, it's just like a powder puff piece just to be nice to every club he can find to be nice to. I did expect Villa to feature with how well-planned Villa's deals were. So he just said Aston Villa did good business relatively early, bringing in Coutinho and Dean. But then he just panders to the big four as usual. He says Chelsea, Manchester United and Manchester City are also examples of clubs with a policy. Well, City just bought Julian Alvarez, the best player in South America at the minute. Is that not what City have been doing the whole time since they've got oil money? Just find the best player and just
buy it. There you go, that's their policy.
Mm-hmm. But I was more interested in United and Chelsea's policy, so right on. It seems doing nothing is also a plan, according to Fabrizio. So rather than annoy United fans who were all annoyed, he said it was a clear strategy to not include obligations to buy for fringe players and loan, and not taking a huge sum for Newcastle on the final day for Jesse Lingard, despite him being free to leave for nothing in the summer. So rather than cash in on Lingard, now you've got a player who you aren't even playing at the minute. It's just going to sit there and lose money.
Well, I think the Lingard situation was served up potentially by what happened to Mr. Greenwood, and United obviously need cover for that situation. And they offloaded a couple of others on loan, so I can see why Lingard stays. I mean, I would probably, if I was United boss, I'd probably keep him as well.
I would probably play him the way they're playing at the minute. But he finishes his complimentary tour of the big four with Liverpool. He said their hijacking of the Luis Diaz to Spurs deal was part of a long-term plan and not just a quick, oh, he's good player, get him quick because Spurs are going to get him. I mean, that's just a deadline day move. That's just the definition of opportunism. It's not a long-term plan. Yeah. Still, throughout this whole piece that he's written for The Guardian, I still haven't seen any panic at all. You know, there's no... Everybody else knows that Newcastle were trying to buy every footballer with two legs they could get, and still... nothing at all about the panic. It's just,
if they want to escape relegation, they better start buying players with four legs,
two and 12 arms.
But I mean, like, I've no harm against the guy, but I mean, it's just a bit beige, and it's not necessary. I mean, his Twitter column's all right.
I mean, The Guardian have him writing because obviously he's got a huge social media reach, and it's his second language, English, so I'm gonna cut him some slack on that one. But it is, everybody's feathering each other's nests, I think. But I got into a DM conversation with him about something. I can't remember. I ruffled his feathers on something. Oh, what was it? What did I say to him?
Was it Mr. Each Way Bet you called him or something like that?
Yeah, I called him Mr. Each Way Bet, and then he slid into my DMs there because obviously touched a nerve. Right, so let's get into the 3 points, shall we? First of all, this is a strange one. I mean, point number one, you know about the whole England debate about should they play friendlies around the UK in different grounds, well, in England, shall we say, which, must admit I'm kind of behind, but obviously they've had to pay off Wembley because, there's a bit of a shit show the costing behind that, etc. But in the US, they decided to play a World Cup qualifier against Honduras. They decided Minnesota was a good place to play it in winter. And when they rocked up, it was minus 16 degrees, the lowest temperature in any US team, national team, any game in their history. It was so cold that fans' beer was freezing in the stadium.
That's brilliant, isn't that shot?
And, we're looking at a picture here of a gloved hand with a plastic pint glass of beer that's got ice cubes in it.
I'm hoping they don't throw it. Imagine getting hit by that.
Yeah, but don't give it to any Everton fans.
Ooh, frozen Lucozade, lovely.
You know, you could have played it in Florida, maybe. I mean,
USA once in Miami, I think. It was many, many years ago. I'm sure we did.
Like some Minnesota, is it like a council Twitter account or something? You know, they were putting out warnings like Arctic air with dangerously cold wind chills has settled across the region. Wind chills of minus 25 to 30 are likely in the morning. You know, all these kind of weather warnings. And all these players, Honduras players and the USA players, all in snoods and balaclavas. And
believable, isn't it?
Just... just not much thought. I mean, everybody knows that in Minnesota, anybody who follows NFL will know when it gets to the winter, there's a good chance you're going to be watching games where the pitch is white and everybody's wearing about five coats each. I mean, I always remember there was Josh Hartnett, the Hollywood actor, and is it Rachel Lee Cook, who you might remember from some kind of teen films. They're both from Minnesota. And I remember, you know, interviews with them talking about Minnesota, and both of them referred to shoveling snow. So obviously it's well known in the States that Minnesota is pretty chilly at this time of the year. So let's put that one down as bad planning. I mean, anything funny happened in that game because of the weather? Or
I wouldn't say funny, but two Honduran players were treated for hypothermia, which didn't please their boss. Their boss, Hernan Dario Gomez, questioned why the USA had made the decision. He goes, "Have the boys in the dressing room with discomfort? There are some in IV drips. Football's not for suffering. Playing like this is no good."
Yeah. On paper, the US team should beat them wherever they played. So I don't know if it was like for tactical advantage. Anyway, let's move on to Champions League pizza. Point number two, UEFA. This is so indicative of the Premier
Modern
League.
Society as well.
Licensing in football or modern society. UEFA reportedly were threatening to take legal action against a restaurant in Germany over the name of one of their pizzas. The pizza restaurant labeled one of their dishes the Champion League, which I'm assuming is some kind of mushroom-based pizza. The owner of the pizza shop tweeted, "Just wanted to briefly mention that the UEFA have filed legal action against our pizza shop because a pizza is called Champion League." He ends his tweet, "No shit," because you're just thinking...
it's so obviously a gag. Just enjoy it.
Yeah, that he couldn't believe that UEFA would be so... pedantic to do this. And it's not even Champions League. It's not as if they're taking the name. This is like, you know, if you put up a t-shirt with Aston Villa on, you're going to get a proverbial knock on the door. It's just how, and you know, it's like anybody who puts up clips of the goals or whatever, it's soon taken down because the licensing companies are so on this. And they're nasty in terms of, there's not spirit of the sport. UEFA obviously employed some snazzy PR firm to address this once they saw the backlash that was coming their way. They put out a statement. Clearly some people are making a meal of this. Boom, boom. Mm-hmm. "This seems to be a case of overzealous local trademark agent acting too hastily. The Champions League can happily live alongside this delicious sounding pizza."
Great PR for the restaurant though, isn't it now? It's perfect.
Oh, yeah, yes. I'm going to order one, but I mean, it's going to be cold when it comes in from Germany.
They're not known
isn't
for
it?
Their pizzas, to be honest.
That's a very good point, Mr. Bud. Point number three, from Shonky Pizzas, although we haven't tasted it, to Shonky NFTs. If you don't know what NFTs are, non-fungible tokens, which are JPEGs, basically, are they
digital
not?
Collectibles.
Mm.
Although we could go,
on them alone.
It's another podcast to explain what the blockchain is and smart contracts or whatever. But it's you own the thing, the NFT. So it's like a way of owning art or pictures. There is one of the more famous and expensive collections of NFTs are the Bored Ape Yacht Club. And there's so many knockoff versions and variants of this. And one of the owners, because these Bored Ape Yacht Club things, it's like you're buying into a membership of a club, and a lot of celebrities are spending silly, you know, hundreds of thousands to have a JPEG of a monkey. And one of these owners has launched this Ape Kids Club, which the artwork is actually pretty shonky, if you want to ask my personal opinion on them. But anyway, it's just becomes things where they get influencers involved or celebrities involved, and then they hype these things up. And this is what John Terry's been obviously paid to do, as well as what's that boxing exercise thing where you strap it on your head and punch the ball.
Seen the video.
Yeah, he's been doing a lot of shonky advertising work when he should really be getting into football management, after all. That's
what
he did
Villa.
His badges for. Yeah, allegedly. I'm sure he didn't leave Villa to get into NFT promotion.
Or maybe he did.
Anyway, they've been had their knuckles wrapped because they've been using things like the Premier League trophy, which kind of links into the pizza situation. The copyrights, obviously the Premier League copyright team were knocking on the door saying they've actually used the image illegally because Terry and his cohorts are obviously making corn on these JPEGs. They've used a few players like, Villa's Ezra Konsa is one that's has been personalised, Jack Wilshere, Ashley Cole and Willian as well. And both Premier League and Chelsea have took legal advice over the copyrighted images in terms of, you know, the kit and the trophies. And Terry and his cohorts have been forced to take them down. Terry, when I saw his tweet, his first mention of NFTs, it was like, this is cringy. This is like, you've just been approached to basically pump something and market it. It wasn't a genuinely into NFTs and the crypto space. It was like somebody who was like, right, John, we'll give you this money. You know, can you pump it up? Right, before we launch full on into the show, I just want to give a shout out to the supporters of this episode, Penfold. Now we're into 2022, and I think you should be getting your finances up to scratch. So in the UK, it's if you haven't got a pension already, that's probably the conservative rock you need in your investment portfolio, especially if you're a freelance. A lot of big percentage of freelancers haven't got any pension, which is something I realized last year when I finally got a pension through Penfold. So it takes literally 5 minutes. You can set it up on your phone. And if you open your Penfold pension using the code MOMS, if you go to getpenfold.com/moms and use the code MOMS to open it, you get an extra £50 in your pension as soon as you fund it, as well as getting the 25% bonus on anything you put in, the government bonus. Your money is invested. You can choose the risk and tier, but you will get percentage back, obviously, from your investments, and that compounds and builds and over time. It's quite astonishing how it builds. And, you know, the younger you are, the better, but it's never too late. Any investment, even a pension, your capital is at risk, but do sign up at the link and get that extra £50 when you set it up. And you can, if you've got any other existing pensions, you can draft them into your pot as well, and they'll actually do that for.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
For you. Right, let's get into the main section of this show, where we'll be focusing on how we perceived the transfer window. I think, as Fabrizio Romano said, the January window was very much an example of a club with a policy. And if you cast your minds back just prior, at the end of December, Gerrard said that if fans knew who they were going after and if they got them in, they would be excited. Was you excited, Mr. Shaw?
I don't think you can be any more excited than getting Felipe Coutinho in. I just think, short of Messi, that's probably as high as you're going to get. realistically, as in a free agent and sort of like that stature for his country.
And?
Oh, and we've got Luka Dean as well, who's
you can't even look past Coutinho.
I can't.
Can you?
I mean, this is the thing. You can't. I mean, if you think back to the first season in the Premier League, whenever you're rolling in Borja Bastón on the last day, and you just jump forward two seasons, and it's Felipe Coutinho and Luka Dean, it's just, it's night and day. You can't be annoyed at getting those two players in. I mean, there was talk that Villa weren't going to sign anybody in this window.
Yeah, I think that's how they're playing. If they don't get the right, I mean, they've obviously had eyes on him, and the Lucas Dean, obviously, there was conversations building up to that. So I think the situation is, if we do not get these players that we actually, these guys, particular guys, there isn't a B, C. It's not as if we are, I think they'd be happy with, to go on with Target, for example, instead of Lucas Dean. It's just that he was available, and Coutinho's like kind of an anomaly. There's not like a version B and a version C. I think you're looking at different kind of players. So I think that's, if there was no movement, then that's because they just didn't snag these opportunist purchases. Chris, when you go back, I mean, we're just talking generally at the moment before we kind of dig in deeper. When you go back to Smith leaving, and there's that kind of uncertainty of is this a good move? Is this too early? Do we owe him to have a more of a crack of the whip of turning this around? To this present day, when you've seen what Gerrard's been doing, what Gerrard's been saying, and what's happened in the transfer window so far, I think it clarifies that Smith decision, doesn't it?
Wholeheartedly. You look at what they've done at executive level and then at management level, and even to a certain extent on the pitch, they've made some pretty ruthless decisions in terms of team selection and people who've been let go, who thought, oh wow, I don't think anybody at the turn of the year would have expected Matt Target to not be playing at the club, bearing in mind he was your player's player of the season. Yeah. But they've said, well, if we can upgrade, and let's be frank, Luka Dina is an upgrade. You know, I think Perslow said in a Sky interview, didn't he? We had a very short window, it became available and we struck very quickly, and I think that was probably one of the buys of the January window, because I think we said it, you know, if Rafa leaves before him, Dina is still at Everton now.
Yeah, more than likely. Mm-hmm. Especially if he got wind that Lampard was coming, you'd be thinking, yeah, this sounds like a good fresh start to me.
He seems to be glad to be here. I think he could become quite a big player for us. Especially, you know, we were getting a guy who was A, match fit, B, is used to the league, and will settle reasonably quickly.
As long as people pass to him, I'll throw that in.
They're starting to now, aren't they? I think the Callum Chambers deal on paper looks relatively low risk. I think Robin Olsen, I think he'd obviously highlighted the fact that Steer hasn't played a lot of football in the last few years. He probably needs to go out and play. And Olsen is probably a bit of an upgrade in terms of someone, I think it's about 40 caps-ish for Sweden. And then obviously the Coutinho deal is that little bit of glitter. And as it seems to, in terms of, we said it in the previous pod before Everton's probably the first time this season where you look at that team on paper, you know, it's sort of an hour before kickoff and go, oh yeah, I'm having that. That looks about as strong as we're going to get right now. And you look at the team sheet now, you know, and even the guys coming back in terms of Bailey, Traore, Trezeguet, etc., maybe even Nakamba. If everyone's fit, I think our starting lineup pretty much picks itself now, bar a little bit of variety. And
even the context of the last 10 years, that's like the best, strongest team we've put out. So.
And then I think even in terms of the outgoing deals we've done, I think we've managed to get someone like a Kane Kessler. He's managed to go up a league. Yeah, they brought him in, got him on the bench for a couple of games, had a bit of a look at him and thought, actually, you shouldn't be playing League Two. Let's get you out to League One. I think the fact that Louis Barry's gone to Swindon, hopefully he'll do okay. And the big one for me is they've managed to get Cameron Archer, a really good move to a reasonably good side. And he's come off the bat really quickly, hasn't he, at Preston? He's done really well in a good league. Same as Keenan Davis at Forest, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, Archer's scored, Davis has as well. They've scored a couple of goals each. But Archer, I mean, you know, I think I said on the previous show recently that he's the one I'm most excited about because he just looks a natural finisher.
Yeah. At every level he plays, if you put him in front of goal, he scores goals.
Yeah, and it's like instinctive, which then the only argument is he tough enough? Is he like physically up for it? And I think he is. And then it's what is his all-round game? But he's so good at finishing that...
You can always make a claim for him to be in your squad.
Yeah, and match day squad is always worth having on the bench because you just need one chance, really. If you bring him on as a sub, it'd be good to have him in the match day squad after he's got some games under his belt and know that he's always an option, that you can actually bring somebody. Because, you know, how long have we been? It's been a few seasons where we've had a bench where we haven't had any game changes. I mean, you know, Phil nicknamed Keenan Davis, Kindle Davis, because you might as well read a Kindle when he comes on, because you know he's not really going to be, you know, pushing for the, it's not coming off the bench to get you that last minute winner or equaliser.
The interesting one for me was the Matt Target one.
The headline was, in terms of Matt Target going from a Villa supporter point of view, was why? They couldn't make sense of it. I thought Villa wanted to go somewhere and keep a strong squad. And I think the situation is, from Matt Target's point of view, and also Villa's point of view, Villa haven't got a bottomless pit of money. They've got to make this work as a business, as financial fair play. So obviously the wage bill's taken a jump this transfer window with Coutinho and Lucas Dean. In the summer, we brought in three big ones, and I don't think Grealish's wages cover those three players, do they?
No.
Because they're all top-tier wages. And then he suddenly increased again in the January window. So that's why it's attractive from the club's point of view to get Target out there. Also, we're not exactly playing for anything definite, fire night. It's how high we can finish in the league. We're not realistically chasing for Europe at this stage. We're not in any of the cups. So if you are going for the league, or you're in a, you know, you're chasing silverware, then yeah, maybe you want to keep Target just in case. But when you look in the squad and you've got Ashley Young, who was actually bought in to give Target competition and you know, obviously coverage as well. You've got Courtney Hills, who can play there, even Mings. If you're getting down to the bare bones, you're not really going to be in an injury crisis that we can't field somebody who can play and has played at left back. So from that point of view, from Villa's point of view, it's like, well, yeah, if you can get his wages back and he can get a fee, it kind of makes sense, because he's not going to be playing, is he?
No.
He's not. You do not pay 25 million for a left back for competition.
Yeah, you don't go and buy a French international and a team who generally you'd say are on a similar level to you, and their captain, for them to not play. If he's here and he's fit, he plays, and he's an upgrade.
Yeah, 100%. So from a player's point of view, Matt Target would have seen that coming. This isn't like getting in Ashley Young and going, oh, a bit of competition for your Target should raise your game and keep you keen, keep you, you
this
know,
is a ruthless decision, isn't it? This is like, sorry, Matt.
Target sees that and he goes, I'm fucked here. I need to get out. If I can get a move to a Premier League team, then I'll take it, because I don't, you know, he can't downgrade his status. He's not going to go out on loan to a Championship team at this stage, not when he's been like Player of the Year last season.
I think a lot of the online reaction to it and tears over it was because of where he was going. He was going to Newcastle, and it's like, don't send them to Newcastle, don't help them stay up, because then they'll be part of your competition in seasons to come.
Yeah, well, that is my gripe. Well, it's the downside to this, is long term, it could come back and punch you in the face. I think any team outside the top four at this moment, and probably even supporters of those top four teams, want to see Newcastle get relegated this season. I mean, let's be honest about this. Because of what's going to happen in the summer transfer window onwards, basically, they will be able to outbid most teams, and they can, you know, start building properly henceforth. At the moment, in this window, there is that kind of doubt. Am I signing, you know, any player's got it in their mind, am I signing for a team that's going to be in the Championship next season? Now, I think there'll be enough wagging the Newcastle tail now, after the signings they've made, to potentially finish above the likes of Watford, Burnley.
I mean, if you watched that Watford-Burnley game, they are hopeless.
Yeah, and you know, and it's quite an astute buy to take Burnley's one of their main men off them as well. So if I was a Newcastle fan at this point, I would feel, you know, reasonably bullish that we could get out of this after what they did in the transfer window. So from that point of view, yeah, Target is like, let him rot on the bench if it means Newcastle get relegated. I mean, that is a fair trade, because it will keep Newcastle out of the picture. Give us, I think the next season, if we had, in terms of, if you're just facing it up, Newcastle and Villa, in terms of progress, if they had a season in the Championship, what we're going to do in the next season will give us enough of a head start to get going, I think, as a proper force. And I'm not talking just like, you know, milling around.
I mean, my sort of thought on the Target thing was, I understand why he'd want to leave. I would have personally kept him and just said to him, compete till the summer. If it's not happening for you, we will happily accept a bid for you and you can go. But for now, just stay and compete.
Yeah, but as we just said, he's not buying that compete. Nobody pays 25 million and goes, right then, lads, good luck. May the best man win. You're buying him to start.
And Gerrard knows, you know, if the fact that they've, yeah,
There's no fucking chance for Target to play.
The fact that they've done that deal for Digne, Gerrard knows that he's a huge upgrade. The upside on Digne, especially crossing the halfway line, I think defensively there's probably not too much between them other than international experience. But Digne, when you see him cross the halfway line, you're just seeing such a superior player.
Dean is Gerrard's man. Target is Smith's man. And that's another factor why he's not going to play. And it's not a competition thing. And, you know, Villa paid decent money for Target and bought Target to be their fullback for the foreseeable future. So, you know, Gerrard's going, right, yeah, that's not going to happen. And this is a different direction. So off ski he goes. Now, is Target going to transform Newcastle and keep them up?
Well, he's not been great with the fans back in the ground, and St James's is notoriously a very difficult ground to play at when things start going against you. So, and they love a scapegoat more than the Villa.
You know, I'm not going to pin this on him, but I'll suggest that emotion, and we've mentioned it before, player of the year when there's no fans, when there's fans, different story. So that's a good point, Chris. The Newcastle fans, there's going to be expectations and they're going to get jittery and they're going to have squeaky bums potentially as the season tightens up. So yeah, I don't think it's, when you boil it down, I don't think it's a case of we're giving them a player that's going to keep them up. I think he could be agent Target at end of the day.
He may well be. And I think it's probably good for Jed Steer to go out to Luton and play. You know, he's been around Villa a long time. You know, he's the last remnants of the Paul Lambert era, for God's sake.
Yeah, to me, he's a number three. If Martinez is injured, it's such a drop.
Yeah, you've gone from a truly world-class top five goalies in the world territory to a championship goalkeeper.
So you got to take sentiment out there. I don't have that confidence when Steer's in goal. I think I have nothing against Steer, and Steer no problem in the championship. I think he's a very good championship keeper, actually. But he's not a Premier League number one for me, any stretch of the imagination. So that's not a really much of a conversation there. I mean, the Callum Chambers one is interesting, but they had to get somebody in straight off the bat because obviously Axel Tuanzebe went to Naples. But I think there's a line drawn under Axel now where you're thinking, well, he's actually perhaps not as good as Manchester United thought he might be. And we've had a good look at him, obviously, repeated loan spells. And I don't think he's as good as we thought he might kick on. So I think it's time
his career stalled, didn't it, with injuries and not playing. Yeah. He's too far behind in his development and for where we want to be. Our ambitions of outgrown him, and I think Chambers is a really savvy bit of business. Very low risk, free transfer. He's got Premier League experience, played in Europe, etc.
He's got more Premier League experience than any of our other defenders, including
and similar
Mings.
To Ashley Young, you've got another sort of defensive / midfield relative utility player, which I think is probably good to have.
Yeah, and he's probably happy to be there. I mean, if he's not getting a look in at Arsenal, he's more of a chance of getting a look in at Villa, even if it is from the bench.
Why would you say something like that?
What, that he's happier?
Are you saying that we are inferior to Arsenal? Is that what you're trying to say, Mr. Shaw?
I'm trying to say the ex-Villa are more likely to see the internal worth of a player in different positions than Arsenal would be.
He's digging himself
well
out there. This hole.
I agree. I do agree, though. I think Villa see multiple roles for him. I'd imagine he's probably still on reasonably good money as well. Arsenal, what a weird club they are. I mean, they are, you know, compared to some of the teams who panic bought, Arsenal were the opposite, weren't they? They were panic selling. They couldn't get everybody out the door fast enough, could they? It's bizarre.
I always thought Callum Chambers, I mean, he slipped off the radar in terms of my football awareness because I always remember him as a right back. So he obviously played a chunk of games there.
He played sort of central midfield, didn't he, in Fulham? And
yeah, it's one of those where his versatility might dog him in terms of winning a starting berth, but he's good for cover. And, you know, as a sub, he gives you options as well. I can't see him getting past
Cash,
Konsa and Mings in the central role. And Cash has just got a bit more, I think, going bombing forward in terms of how Gerrard wants to play for him to really trouble
Cash. It's good
that
Cash has a little bit of competition, though, because Chambers is kind of steady.
Yeah.
I think they'll be looking at Cash, and we've said it, and it's Cash just needs to be, I think he said it himself in an interview relatively recently, that, you know, he needs to work on his final ball. If he can get his play in the final third sorted, you're looking at a very good player. And that's where I'm sure a lot of this, the Atletico Madrid rumour has come from in the last couple of weeks. Because obviously they got rid of...
That yeah. made me laugh.
I mean, I kind of get it, but...
I mean, in terms of a rumour, because we've started having doubts the last few months because his delivery has been so bad. And what we were excited mm-hmm. about Cash was what he could add to the party going forward. And then you think, well, Lucas Digne's come in. If Cash can actually get to the level that we were hoping he would go, then we've got a pretty dynamic...
Yeah, I think if he gets his final ball, he's going to be a cracking player for us because I really like him defensively.
Yeah, but he just regressed, and then to have these Atletico Madrid rumours, you're thinking, how real are they? And are they lazy just because it's like, well, you know, we've got to replace Trippier with a Premier League right back. But yeah, I would say you'd need to improve his game or else Villa would be like, yeah, how much do you want him?
Especially as Atletico are essentially a Champions League team these days.
Yeah.
It's not to say he can't play at that level in the future. I actually think he probably can, but it's not just yet. He needs to refine his game a little bit, but and I think Villa's a really good place for him to do that. But sort of broadly, I think we've done really good business.
Yeah.
I think in January, and when you sort of look longer term, I think you look at it over the season. I look at what we're going to probably do in the summer now, and I think if everything goes to plan with Coutinho, you probably make that permanent. From what his agent came out and said this week, he's actually really happy here already. He feels liked again. He's enjoying his football, which is that's kind of what Gerrard has said from the off. You know, get him happy as player.
I mean, let's go through that. I mean, if you talk about the defence, I think we've added a bit more dynamism and going experience. Forward, which helps the whole team. And then in terms of depth, have we improved
that?
I think we just improved it. I think. Callum Chambers, XL was pretty much played this, you know, he could play defensive midfielder as well as right back as well. So I think it's almost like for like.
But this is the thing, Axel didn't belong to Villa.
I
mean, Chambers, because it's permanent, it's like, right, make him better, make him invest the time in him because it's going to be money you get back.
So we've actually now got a defence for the foreseeable future, I think. Because Cash, you're not going to rush out any moment soon to improve. You're not going to do that with a left back. And then Mings and Konsa are a proven partnership. And, you know, as long as Mings can cut out the odd laps, then you've got a decent back four and a very good keeper.
Well, we aren't going to get a better goalkeeper than Martinez.
No, and Olsen, hopefully...
An able backup.
You know, if he's coming in one or two games, or if Argentina are breaking the rules again in their international duty, then, you know, at least he can come in one or two games. But I think we're a stronger outfit defensively, and then you go further forward, and as well as that dynamicness on the left now with Lucas Digne, Coutinho just adds... dimension, yeah. I think, and he just, I think he improved. I mean, whatever he can do himself, but he's also straight away. You've seen a better Buendia, you've seen a better Ramsey.
Yeah. I think what it does as well is it all season through the summer. We didn't know what system Smith was going to play. That was probably his downfall in the end. He didn't know what his combinations were. Gerrard's come in and simplified things, and all of a sudden, the Everton game, you thought that looks like the system we're going to play: four at the back, two sitters, three behind a lone striker, and you think. That looks pretty good to me, especially if the fullbacks really... I mean, I'm really intrigued to see how we go against Leeds in terms of formation, shape and approach, because I think he knows how he wants to play with the tools he's got now. And he's obviously evaluated. You can see... We saw very quickly, didn't we, who he liked and who he didn't. The fact that El Ghazi didn't get a kick and now he's at Everton, probably going to sit on the bench there.
Yeah.
That kind of speaks for itself. I'm really interested with those three wide guys, if and when they feature... You know, Traore, Trezeguet, Bailey, I think they're going to be fighting for maybe one spot and they're going to be lucky at that. Because I look at those three behind a Watkins or an Ings and I'm thinking that's like a holy trinity. Ramsey at the moment is probably one of the first names on the team sheet. He's in such good form. Buendia's probably our best player at the moment. And obviously Coutinho, if he's fit and healthy and playing well, they pretty much pick themselves. The only thing I'm sort of looking further ahead, sorry Phil, was... What it maybe means now is that, in theory, you're going to look to retain what you've got now, which I'm pretty confident we will in the summer. You're probably only looking at bringing in one big player, and then it's a relatively low-key summer because you've done your heavy lifting now.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I was saying in the last show, if we get a couple of, you know, other, let's say, upgrades or... even if it's just upgrading the matchday squad, we have a bit of luck and people stay fit, then this is a dangerous team.
Yeah, I agree, because I think we've got firepower all over the field and the squad. Someone like a Bailey doesn't need to necessarily be a starter, but we've seen in, what was it, 20 minutes yeah. against Everton, what he's all about, if you can get him pointing in the right direction.
Because look how much upside there is, potentially. Coutinho, he's done fuck all so far. He's played a couple of minutes for Villa, scored a goal, that's it. If he's banging in 20 goals and playing really good regularly, look at that upside yeah. of what that's going to mean to Villa. Bailey, he's he's literally waved at the whole ten once, and that's about
Traore,
it.
Traore, we sort of saw behind closed doors what he's about, and we know what Trezeguet can do and can't do.
Oh, why do you keep mentioning those idiots?
Because they're all options, aren't they?
Right, I'm talking about legit. Like, we haven't seen what Bailey can do. There's so much upside there. There's so much upside on what Coutinho can do. Even McGinn, there's more to come, you know, from him.
Ings
Louise.
With service.
Yes, see, Ings hasn't done anything yet. There's so much upside from
Buendia,
him.
Now we're seeing the upside, aren't we? We're seeing Buendia since Christmas, and you're like, wow.
He's only just started. And Watkins, still, as we said, his goal from last season was... should be to beat the tally last season, because he could have. He hit the post. He had so many VAR decisions against him. What we've experienced at the moment, there's so much more potentially. And that's why I'm saying, like, next season, this next half of season is really, it's kind of fine-tuning. Yeah. And hopefully you can keep the parts that you want and get a couple more in. I don't think there's going to be wholesale changes. I think he's looking at, right, let's use this season to get ready for next season, because nobody's going to expect us. I'm putting it out there, but I think we can really challenge. And I'm talking at the top.
Well, I mean, this is the Louise is the elephant in the room, so to speak, because we all said before the transfer window, what one position do you want to improve in the team? If you could pick one position before Coutinho, before Dean, before anybody was even talked about, it was right, a midfielder that can break up play, especially because Nakamba's injured and nobody even went for one. I mean, you're not going to tell me that the way they got Dean over the line and the way they got the Coutinho deal done, things like that there, if there wasn't a player available at any team that he thought he needed, he wouldn't have went and got. I mean, it wasn't going to improve on what he had. There was all this talk about Bissouma and things.
I think that Juventus, I mean, we're not even mentioning his name, the Juventus guy who chose the London life, the price they got him at, etc. If we thought he was that good, if we thought he was significantly better than Louise and what we had, Sanson, Nakamba, we would be looking for a player 25 and over, I think, 25, 30, to really upgrade. To me, it sounds like he's just going to be another one. He would have been on the par with a lot of players that we already have.
Typical Spurs player.
If rumours are to be believed, what Villa turned around, what, 3 bids for Louise in the transfer window of 30 million plus? I mean, if you're going to improve and what people are going to bid for, you're going to have to spend more than 30 million.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, you know, you would call it savvy. If we got this guy in for 15 and sold Louise for 30, and this guy turned out to be exactly what we were after, then, you know, high fives all around. I don't particularly subscribe to the model that whatever you know, people pay for you in the transfer window is how good you are and how you can be compared to, you know, each other. It doesn't, I mean, that's kind of football manager, the computer game talk, isn't it?
I think Louise has still got upside. I know he's a little bit inconsistent, but I think the way we want to play in terms of a ball retention system, I think he's pretty good at that.
Yeah, and also, you know, we've seen what he's capable of in terms of shooting, and that is something we've only seen at the start. So there's that. He just needs to contribute 4 or 5 goals a season.
A lot of it's going to be the system, I think, as well. I think we look like we might have a system that can work, and players now are being brought in and are expected to fit that system, as opposed to, you know, we didn't quite know where some of the Smith signings fitted in, and he clearly didn't at the start of the season. I think now we know, you know, by sort of February, okay, this is our best team, this is our best system, let's go for it. I said it before, didn't I? I said it on TalkSport about there's real similarities with that first O'Neill season where we kind of stumbled through a lot of the early parts of that season and then built a team, did a really good bit of January business with the likes of, you know, Maloney, Carew, etc., Young. By the end of that season, we were going through teams. We finished the season really strongly. The start of the next season, we came off the bat and we were flying. And we had a very, very good side under O'Neill that season, in the second season. And you said it, David, and I agree. There's no reason why we can't be very upwardly mobile, because I look at the teams that we want to sort of rein in a little bit, like Arsenal, Tottenham. They're not getting a lot better in a hurry. Why not?
And, you know, Leicester and Villa have done this previously before. You know, you get promoted, you have that one season where you're kind of languishing around, but you're around the bottom, but you're actually fine-tuning things and working out what you exactly need, because you still have that kind of spirit. I mean, we've kind of done it a bit different because we've still got players from that promotion. mission time. You know, don't get me wrong, like, you know, Mings and McGinn. But in terms of what Leicester did, you know, they had a bit more of a team, but they still had that spirit that got them up the leagues. And then suddenly one season in the Premier League, acclimatization, yep. Next season.
And I think, bang. I mean, you said it, Leicester was a perfect storm. I don't think Villa are sort of hoping for a perfect storm. We want to build a sustainable quality squad rather than just a one season wonder.
I mean, Leicester have that.
They do.
I mean, they've their last
two seasons
since they won the league, they've done pretty well. What they haven't done is just they haven't had that steel to get it over the line. You know, they should have been in the Champions League a couple of seasons more than they have, but they still wouldn't, you know, they've managed to win the FA Cup. But I mean, we're jumping ahead here, but you can see it taking place. There's a logic to this, and obviously we know about where the owners want to be, and they had to pull the trigger on Smith. It wasn't necessarily sacked because of the form at the time. It was I think they pulled out as the bigger picture. It's like, we've got to get going. And it's funny, I was watching the training video of this week, and it looks like the players are like, they're now at work.
Yeah.
And they're kind of enjoying work as opposed to living a good life. And, you know, and everybody's laughing with Smith. It's all kind of nice. But there's something a bit more edgy, a bit more serious about this. And it's like they are at work.
I think you're always going to respond when you've got a manager who, when he asks you to do something, he can literally show you because you know he did it as a player.
Yeah.
It's like, I want you to pop the ball 40 yards like this. What do you mean? I'll show you. Pop. You've seen him when he joins in training. He's still got it. You can't not respect that. If you're a 20-year-old player looking up to him going, fucking hell, that's Steven Gerrard and he can still do it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've mentioned it before. You know, I know that. When we got Smith in the club's social media department, we're putting out clips of Brentford.
Their playing style and stuff. It was embarrassing, wasn't it?
Brentford goals and stuff, and some of the Villa players were texting communication. Seems at Villa going, well, you know, what the hell's going on here? What's
it just
this?
Looks pony, doesn't it?
It just looks pony, and it's not. And you know, Smith had to win over the players. It's not as if he doesn't just walk through the door
and
they all instantly respect him. He had to earn it. But this is like fast track, and it's a different, you know, it's a different level, a different kettle of fish. So we shall see. But it's definitely, if you're looking just within that, say, 1 year time frame, it could be very interesting a year from this point to what is happening at Villa.
I like the fact how Gerrard's framed the last 2 weeks. You know, it's like, no, this is an opportunity. This isn't, oh, we needed the break. We were glad of the break. This is two really important weeks. The fact that they've been quite open about playing two behind closed doors games.
Yeah.
It just puts out the right statement that, no, this isn't a jolly up. This is a really high intensity period. We're going to push the players hard. You would expect them, you know, come that Leeds game and the run of games afterwards to be right at it.
Yeah. Right. We will see what happens against Leeds and then adjourn. Just a novel burning question. We're going to, there's a few burning questions which we'll answer in an extra show for the My Old Man Said patrons. Speaking of which, a big shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons, and thank you for joining us for 2022, and also the newest members, Rob Attride, for being an annual subscriber. If you sign up for the year, you get 2 free months. That's 15% off. And also a big shout out to Jacob Russell as well for joining us as a patron. You get access to Match Club, which is our 24/7 hangout. We also meet up for away games virtually. And you get access to the extra podcast channel as well for exclusive shows. There's a few more coming in the next few days, including the After Hours Burning Questions, which we will answer once we finish recording this main show. Right, burning question, bit of a novel one, the one we're picking out. And the question was from Dale in Match Club. What name would you give to the Las Vegas Villains Stadium, and which ex-villain would you get to manage them? It's obviously a hypothetical question. He spelt villains the correct way, but Wes Edens and Nas Suarez have registered villains with an I. This is still an intrigue. Did they make a mistake? What's the story there? Because they have the trademark to the ANS.
Maybe they're Americanizing it.
Yeah, is it just a case of, but we've villarized it, if you know what I mean, because, you know, the correct spelling is with an I for dictionary purposes, but we villainized it. So they should have gone with the Villa one, really, because they have trademark. They have that trademark. That's why the, you know, the knockoff stores around the ground have to have scars with I in the villains. What would I call the stadium?
I'd call it the Villadrome, because I'm in a bit of a Mad Max kick at the minute. So it's like the Thunderdrome, only it's the Villadrome.
Sell the naming rights and play the FFP game.
Well, when we win the league next, when we win the Premier League next season, just call it the Gerrard Stadium.
Or just the Gerrard.
The Gerrard. That's how far I would go to bestow an accolade. I would name that stadium.
Yeah, Americans love calling things like Field, don't they? Like Ebbets Field and Wrigley Field.
Gerrard Field.
I just call it Villa Field.
Because obviously Mr. Gerrard's a Liverpool Scouse man. I wouldn't name Villa Park after him or form. But the Vegas situation, you can throw his name on there. An ex-villain that would manage them.
I reckon we
should
give Dwight Yorkage his first job.
He's been so desperate.
He'd be
every
a
time
right liability in Las Vegas, wouldn't he, with his history? He'd last a week. Where's Dwight gone? No one knows.
Every time the Villa job is up in the air, old Dwight York comes out the woodwork and suggests that he should be the man. But then the race card gets played. But then you got to ask yourself, Dwight, what experience have you got?
I haven't even been managing under-10s football or working your way up through the youth teams like
Gerrard
did. Have
you done your badges? You can't go from, I don't even know what level of punditry he does.
Not much.
Very casual. It's very ad hoc. You can't go from ad hoc punditry to the Villa hot seat. You've got to actually earn the case. And also, don't walk out on us and go to Manchester.
And then the Blues.
That also doesn't go. Yeah, and the Blues doesn't go down too well. But yeah, so what are we going for? The Gerrard Field and Dwight York as their manager. I'm just thinking if there was a sensible suggestion, but it's one of those where you don't
John
really
John Terry,
care,
give John Terry his first job.
No, he's too busy with his
NFTs. Vegas is great for something like that. There's loads of scams going on there.
NFTs aren't necessarily a scam, just...
Allegedly. Could maybe send Mark Delaney over there, or George Boateng, give them like a bit of a taster.
Well, Phil Neville can get a job managing Inter Miami. Anybody can get a job over there.
Yeah.
Don't send Merson, same reasons, gambling issues, don't...
Phil, close to the bone. Who's ex-Villa who's trying to get into management, let's think?
I'd just go with John Carew.
John Carew would be great fun. Or John Gregory. John Gregory would be good fun.
No, but I'm thinking John Carew for other reasons. Yes. Anyway,
for good, that's... Showgirls too.
Right, thank you very much for listening to the My Old Man Said podcast. Thank you for joining us, gentlemen. If you are listening on Apple or Spotify, you can obviously give us a rating on there if you enjoy the show. If you don't, just don't listen. But there's a star thing on Spotify you can hit, so high fivers on there. Also, don't forget to follow and subscribe, etc., on whatever podcast app you listen to so you get notifications for when the shows drop. And do become a patron if you are able to. That would be the best thing to do for 2022 as we look at revamping My Old Man Said in its 10th year. Changes are coming. Watch this space. Right, until the showdown against Leeds and the aftermath of that, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.